America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Everyone, we are back. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri. We're presented by PPV.com. PPV.com is the streaming service that you want to be a part of as a boxing fan, as a pro wrestling fan, and much more. We have some very fun announcements. 1025, Fundora and Keith Thurman stepping into the ring. A loaded card that's right around the corner. So always follow along with PPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. We're coming to you on Sunday morning off of another historic performance from Terrence Bud Crawford. I picked him. Chris didn't. So this is going to be a whole podcast about me gloating.
No. Flop. Dan the flip-flop. Ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. Bud Crawford, everybody. Bud Crawford, Chris Algieri.
Yeah, So for those just listening, I'm going to take a big swig of my second cup of coffee because
wow, there's a swig.
It has been a long night. It was a late night, early morning. I did watch both cards, I should say, or really just the In a Way fight. But yeah, I'm feeling a little bit this morning. But listen, it's good. Boxing is good. God is good. Bud's good. Bud Crawford is good.
Dude, like he made it look easy in there. Like the first four rounds where I had it even after two.
Same.
It could have been, you know, Skipper, our new unofficial score.
Yeah, he was all over the place with his score.
He was that guy. I don't know.
He was making it up on the back end because he gave too many to Crawford at first, and then
I've been there.
He was giving Canelo like weird rounds that just didn't make sense, just to kind of even it out.
Yeah, we'll get to the whole production and my thoughts on that whole way down later in the show. But in terms of like the competitiveness of the fight, I thought the first couple of rounds were feeling out Canelo loading up on shots, just like how we thought Crawford downloading the data, quote unquote. I had it somewhat even through the first four, but we weren't seeing like Canelo enforce his will like I thought he should have early on. Crawford was he wasn't active either. Like neither guy was active in the first four rounds. So the first four rounds, pretty competitive. How did you see the first quarter of the fight?
Similar to what you just said, I had it even. I think, you know, I was watching it live with Paulie Malignaggi, Jimmy Smith, and Bob Santos. Bob's great, great coach, good mind, good boxing mind. Bob and I were similar in terms of our scoring. I think I had a 2-2 after four. And Paulie had it like 3-1. Like he had a little more for leaning towards Crawford. Which is the surprising.
I'm surprised Paulie didn't have it 9-0 Crawford.
I was arguing with him live about certain rounds. And but it was, you know, it was competitive to a degree early on. Listen, guys, I think we said it on air last time. This was not going to be a good entertaining fight. I knew that. I actually thought this fight
wasn't a dud.
No, like, it was better than I expected it to be. Yeah. I was saying the fight was going to suck, but it didn't. It didn't suck, but it was not a high contact, high action fight whatsoever. It was just awesome to see Bud in all his majesty do what he was doing. But also at the same token, like, I'm disappointed in Canelo. He made not a single adjustment. It didn't throw any combinations all night long. Single shots, expecting like Bud to just turn to dust. And it's funny, when he didn't, Bud just was like, "Oh, I can just do this like this the whole time, and just add a little bit here, add a little bit there, and you're not going to make any adjustment whatsoever." Canelo made absolutely zero adjustments. So all you dorks in my comments about my pick about boxing IQ, this guy doesn't even know what boxing IQ. Yeah, what about now? Okay, boxing IQ. Who showed boxing IQ? Canelo showed zero. Zero boxing IQ. I'm going to wing left hooks at a southpaw from halfway across the ring. What kind of boxing IQ is that?
It was kind of stunning. And Canelo really has never won a fight where he was down in the cards. He doesn't have that adjustment in him. He fights one way, and it's load up, load up, load up, walk you down. And if that fails, like he did against Bivol, it is frustration. You saw visible frustration on Canelo towards the end of the fight, which I thought was just telling.
I saw it around five.
Right, round five. You know, early rounds, I thought it was still up for grabs. I thought it was, okay, this is competitive. Like, Crawford is doing a lot better than I thought he would. He hasn't been pushed back. Canelo exactly hasn't enforced his will yet. So then the sixth round comes. I put this down on my notes. Vintage Crawford. We're seeing the 74-inch reach. We're seeing him clowning, putting his tongue out. We're seeing him throw combinations. We're seeing him be the counterpuncher on Canelo. So maybe in the sixth round is when Canelo thought, all right, I got to start pushing this forward. And this is the beginning of the end for Canelo. And I realized that he was completely effed in this fight, because anytime that he was going to come forward and he wasn't going to throw combinations, Bud is just licking his lips, waiting to fire off combinations. And he started landing in the sixth round. And then from the sixth round on, at least on my card, I thought that's when we saw Crawford take over, get a lot more comfortable, almost get too comfortable at times, where it's like Canelo was still landing good shots, but they were just so few and far between. He was loading up, but it wasn't like he wasn't trying to win, Canelo. He just was limited. He's a limited fighter at this age and the amount of rounds that he has on his odometer. And he just didn't have that like second gear in Crawford. I wouldn't say he was like outstanding, but if you put in all the factors that we talked about for months, at first fight at 168 against the guy in Canelo that was the guy, yeah, it was incredible. And that's what this fight was watching Bud. It was all about Bud, like how he was going to make the adjustments, how he was going to look at the weight, him winning and becoming a historical figure now in boxing. But after the sixth round and then that ninth round, and it was like rock 'em sock 'em. I think that was real desperation from Canelo. And that's when the fans got into it. And that's when I was like, we needed like one moment or one round where they just kind of threw caution to the wind and opened up. And yeah, so those middle rounds and Crawford getting into his bag around round six was pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah. And Paulie and I, when we call fights, you know, we call certain fighters what we call effort guys. It's an effort guy. Like he just pushes more effort, goes harder. Not a whole lot of IQ behind it. Not a whole lot of boxing behind it. Just, all right, this isn't working, I'm going to go harder. Canelo has reverted to being an effort guy, which is crazy. The pound for pound, quote unquote, the pound for pound undisputed, you know, in a weight class doesn't make adjustments, doesn't use boxing IQ, doesn't use a jab, doesn't throw combinations, literally just tries harder, throws faster, and expects everyone to just fall away. And Crawford
also marketed better than any fighter.
Yes. Crawford ain't that guy.
We're going to get into that in Canelo's legacy, but keep going.
Crawford's the worst marketed fighter probably of all time. but skills pay the bill at the end of the day. And Crawford, I think he's really shown himself to be a class act and a gentleman, the way that he's handled himself throughout this whole process. Yep. Even speaking very highly about Canelo immediately after.
That was awesome.
Very awesome. You know, there was a nice moment when, because the belts that we have, the belts are technically are actually trophies. The title is in the ether. It's the idea of who has the title. So when you get your belt, or get your opponent's belts, when you take them from them in the ring, you actually have to give those belts back. It has our names on it. So when I beat Ruslan Provodnikov and I walked out of the ring with his belt on my shoulder, I have to go in the back and meet with him and give him the belt back. That's his trophy to take home. He is forever a world champion. That's his trophy. So Canelo had to go and pick up all those belts from Bud. And they had a really nice moment where they were showing a lot of respect between each other, and it was very cool to see. And Canelo just had the look like, dude, you're just better than me, dude.
Bro,
it's obvious. I had nothing for you.
Canelo getting his belts back from the guy that beat him is the most un-Canelo thing I've ever heard. Like him, I tweeted this out, and it got a lot of reaction. And you know, I just thought Canelo looked very content with the loss.
Yep. Yeah, but he said the same thing to the crowd he would have said if he won. Viva right. Mexico, cabrones!
Like, it was weird.
You lost. I'm like, badly. What are you doing?
I know he made a lot of money, guys. I know. I would say 90% of the responses to me were 150 million. I'd be happy if he won. He's winning in life. 100 million.
How,
yeah.
That's not how competitive.
But now it's all about the money. Like, is it about the money or is it about the legacy and about competitiveness? So, yeah, I do think he made a lot of money, and that I don't care what you say. You start making a lot of money in life. I don't know if you have that same drive. That's what makes Mayweather an absolute freak, because that guy was making top dollar and was still running, doing road work at 3 a.m. I'm not saying Canelo didn't work hard, but I just thought afterwards, it was just strange. I know that he, we clown fighters for when they do their post-fight interviews and they lost, but they claim that they won and they fight it and they're delusional and all that. So I don't know which road you should take. It was just jarring to me to see Canelo just be so content with a loss.
Call that a happy loser. I can't stand happy loser, those guys. Yeah. When
I wasn't going to tweet that because that's way too derogative.
But it is what it is. I'm not saying that's what Canelo is, but that's what that term is. When you see these guys, they get on Instagram after a fight and they're like, just a better man. Like he's just, he's just super good, whatever. And then they're like, they're flaunting their new car or something. It's like, dude, shut up. Go in hiding. You lost. You're a competitor. You just lost on the grandest stage possible. You lost in front of millions of people. Go hide for a little bit. I don't want to see your victory tour in defeat. It's embarrassing. And it's not a good look for showing your competitive desire. And I don't know. I just think, Canelo's had a great career. He's a phenomenal fighter. I love Canelo. I know lately we've been not, I'm not praising him as much as I normally do. I love Canelo. I've enjoyed Canelo fights for years. Going to those fights are some of my favorite memories in this sport. And he's given a lot to the sport in terms of entertainment value over the years. But he's an old 35. And 35 isn't young. He's had a long career. I don't know if the desire is there. That cliche of it's hard to get up in a new road work and you're sleeping in silk sheets seems to be wearing that. But now that he is relinquished of all those titles, I don't care what he does. He can go fight Jake Paul. He can go fight Gervonta Davis or Nia in a way. I don't care. Like he can go on a world tour and go fight Chris Eubank in England there, or go fight some random Thai guy in Thailand. It doesn't matter now. Now that he's not a world champion, now that he's not holding the belts hostage, not fighting number one contenders, whatever he does for entertainment value to make money is completely fine by me.
But you just said he's not a world champion. That hasn't clocked on me yet.
A decade, apparently. 10 years.
Because when he lost to Bivol, you have to remember, that was at 175. Right. He kept his belts. It has been a long time since that Canelo has not been a world champion. That is wild to hear and wild to think about. With Canelo, it's strange because he was marketed so well. He's a Mexican fighter started at 16. By age 20, he's a world champion. By age 23, he's fighting Mayweather, headlining his own events. Marketed perfectly. Had the skills too. Was he ever like the best fighter in the world? No. Was he one of the most visible?
For his weight class, yeah, at times.
Yeah, but I'm talking like clear cut pound for pound. No, he wasn't. But he was in the discussion. He was top five, but he was the most active. He constantly fought. He stayed in the minds of boxing fans. He stayed around. He just put forth a great effort of being that guy. And he was good. Great. He's still going to go down as a great.
Yes.
But he was never the best of this, the best, like the top. Like, obviously, Crawford is that guy. And we'll get to him in a second. We're talking a lot
about Canelo. Floyd was.
Exactly. It's hard for a guy. We talked about this before. It's hard for a guy to be the popularity, the markability, to have the skills to match it. Like De La Hoya, rare breed. Sugar Ray Leonard.
Yeah.
Just about there. Mayweather there. Joshua not there. Marketability. Right. Skill, like it's hard. It's a delicate thing. And Canelo was close, and he was up top there. But
because Canelo is super cool, like he's a cool guy. Like what you see that like the things he does, and you see the interviews that he does, and it's just like you get a vibe. Like he's a cool guy. He seems like a
marketable,
super marketable guy. He says the right things. He's really quick and with his little quips and his responses to people. He has fun in public. He's jovial. He's good to the media. You've had great interviews with him. I've hung out with him at after parties. He's just a cool dude, and that comes across as very genuine. So it was easier to like him, but also he's got that cheat code. He's Mexican. The Mexican fan base is so awesome, and they're so proud of their people. They get behind them. So if you can fight, and you got the marketability, and he's got a very special look. He's a redheaded Mexican, guys. His name is Canelo for a reason. I think we forget about that. Because in the beginning, when he first came out, it was only thing you ever heard was redheaded Mexican. And then Canelo came. It was like, oh, his name is Canelo. You forget that Canelo needs cinnamon.
We don't talk about that anymore. He's always had it and from a young age. And he took it so far. I'm not going to sit here and crap on his legacy. Because the guy stepped in the ring
with
Mayweather, Cotto, Bivol, Golovkin, and now
Kovalev.
Crawford. Like, that is an insane, that is an insane resume. I know he didn't come out on top. I know there's going to be some people dancing on him right now in victory laps. Yeah, he lost to every big fight he stepped up in, he lost. I thought he definitely beat Golovkin in the second fight. I thought he lost the first fight. Yeah, when he stepped up.
But he won.
Right. But what are we asking of our top tier fighters? To step into the ring and throw down. And he did that time and time again. So I don't know what's next for him. It's wild to think about. He's 35. He's got more money than he's ever had. I don't know what route he goes. Canelo Crawford rematch. Do we think that is needed? Because this fight, in my opinion, wasn't close. I don't know what will change in a rematch. In fact, I think it will be even wider. There was a lot of money, though, on the line here. It wasn't like people are clamoring for a rematch.
No. It's a completely unnecessary rematch. Bud showed his superiority. Canelo's detriment is that he doesn't adjust. You think he's going to go and adjust now? No. We don't need to see that fight. The fight didn't get needed to be made in the first place. You know, a year ago when this fight was talked about, we were like, no. But, you know, and as it came to it, it's like, really, it was for Crawford. Did you hear Crawford say that? He said, this fight was given to me by God. This was for me. And honestly, if you look at it if you pull back, it was. This was not for Canelo. Canelo had everything to lose here. Only thing Canelo was doing is padding his bank account with this fight. And I think even Canelo knew he wasn't going to beat this guy. The style just wasn't right. The more hindsight's always 20/20, right, Dan? Mm-hmm. Right, Dan? I know. Based on your pick, hindsight's always 20/20.
Based on my DraftKings bank account, yeah.
Yeah, because if you really think about these guys matching up, how the hell does Canelo beat him? How? He's never shown to be able to deal with a guy that can do what.
It was just the weight. It was really the weight, and the weight proved to be nothing. That was it for me. In my mind, I thought the weight would be too much, and I thought he had one last great performance in him, and it turned out his best performances are in the rearview mirror.
But if you think about weight bullies, you know, historic weight bullies, they throw punches. He tries to box everyone, and I had this epiphany last night watching the show talking to Bob, and I was like, holy shit, he's trying to outbox Crawford. And then I'm like, whoa. He tries to outbox everybody. He doesn't bang. He doesn't brawl. He doesn't come forward and break you down. Remember we were saying that, he's got to go in and break him down. When the hell is the last time Canelo did that? He doesn't do that. He moved Never up in did. Weight because he's faster than the bigger guys. I mean, he had to move up in weight anyway, but he likes the bigger guys. Who's the big British guy?
Callum Smith.
Like that fight, I was like, oh, man. And he dominates him because he's faster. The hand speed was the difference. And you got a big target. Crawford is the opposite. Crawford is a Lara who can punch and who's physical on the inside. I mean, I watched that Lara fight recently. Lara won that fight. I don't give a shit what anybody says. Canelo lost that fight. I always had Lara winning that fight, but I watched it again. I'm like, absolutely wins this fight.
Crazy he took that. It was like he did not need to take that fight. His whole team was like, no. Like, you don't need this. And yeah.
Historically, he can't beat those guys. And I think he knew that too. He looked very frustrated and concerned in the middle of that fight. Like he had no answers. And he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk Crawford. Oh, wait. Before we get to Crawford, the judges, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because they got it right. But we talked about last week about some funny business. Tim Cheatham and Max DeLuca had it even after 10. All three judges had Crawford sweeping the final two rounds. So Crawford had to win the last two rounds on Cheatham and DeLuca's card to win. And I think that is absolutely absurd.
I think the judges listened to our last podcast and my breakdown because literally the scorecard mimicked exactly what I said. And I thought it was going to be closer than it was. Bud ran away with it, but I said that it was going to be Bud early and Bud late, and the middle rounds are going to be Canelo, and it was going to be a close finish. These guys literally follow that exact script for the fight, but really that wasn't the story of the fight.
No, I'm looking at the cards now, like Cheatham. DeLuca gave Canelo the first two rounds, and then he gave him the fifth, the eighth, and the ninth. He gave him the ninth? Max DeLuca is the only judge that gave Canelo the ninth. The ninth is when Crawford was like piecing him up. Right? Man. Round nine, yeah, rock 'em, sock 'em. Round seven was the vintage. Let's see how they had round seven. They better had it all. Oh my God.
There was one round later on where Canelo landed a bunch of good clean shots. But the thing about it was hard to see. You had to really watch because Crawford didn't react to anything.
No, he didn't have a mark on him either. He
didn't react to a single thing that Canelo landed. But did listen, Canelo landed some good clean shots. Yeah, did he get full power? No, because he took power off because he was missing so much early. But he landed some, like, there was a time he landed this uppercut that hit Crawford right on the brow. And then hit him with a good right hand right on his chin right afterwards. That was one of those later rounds. I could see how he could give Canelo that round based off those punches, but also the perception that judges get in their mind where they're like, he's a bigger guy. That punch means a lot more. That happens a lot.
Yeah, Cheatham gave Canelo round 7. I thought that was one of the most clear rounds for Crawford. No, round 6. I messed that up. It's early, guys. Sorry. Round 6.
Early and late at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know where I am right now. Round 6, everyone gave him to Crawford. Okay, never mind. Yeah, not the biggest story. I just thought it was, you know, any close round, it seems like they gave it to Canelo. I thought it was way wider. I thought Crawford was pulled away. They also have Crawford's name spelt wrong on the scorecard. 2 R's. It's 1 R. Over to Crawford. Wow. We should have led off with him, but we don't plan these shows out. We just go. 3-time undisputed. I mean, just made it look easy against Canelo Alvarez. Just this guy, like you said, Chris, doesn't know how to lose, just has the will to win. You could place him in any era, and he would give that era's top dog fits. Mm-hmm.
And apparently in any weight class. The weight doesn't matter. The guy is just a junkyard dog. It doesn't matter. You know, it's that old, I guess I'm Chris cliches today, but it's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog. Well, listen, right. Crawford has the biggest fight in him, man. And it's wild that he's able to do this. And he does it with such confidence. He wasn't surprised. He wasn't surprised that he was dominating. That's the crazy thing. And listen, I talked to Bomack, him and I see each other at a lot of Pro Box TV shows because he's got a lot of fighters that fight on our cards, Lester Martinez being one of them, which we'll get to. But Bomack told me this a year ago. He's like, I'm like, God, what's going to happen in that fight? He's like, Buzz going to whip his ass. He's like, watch. He's going to whip his ass, bro. He told me so straight down the middle, flat out. Oh, Buzz going to wax that ass. Don't worry. Watch. Okay.
Unreal. Great. Speaking of him and Bomack, it's just so refreshing to see a fighter and his trainer stick together through thick and thin. We've seen so many guys break up and even Pacquiao and Roach for a little bit. Golovkin and Abel Sanchez and go down the list. Like, to see those two, it's such a strong bond, and that team is strong. Like, did you notice that guy in the background? He was wearing like the black outfit with the red tie. He's a white guy in Bud's camp. I don't know his name, but I've seen that guy literally since the first time I ever saw Bud fight. So you can just tell that Bud keeps his circle real tight, real loyal guy. And that's important. Chris, you can speak on that. Like, continuity, like having the same camp, like having the same people around. And, it could go both ways in terms of things getting stale. But there's something to be said about him having this amazing team out in Omaha, in Colorado Springs, where they train, and adding on all these, like, proteges, like Shakur being part of this team, and Bud's the leader. He's the captain for sure. But him and Bomack needs his roses too, because that guy's a hell of a trainer.
Amazing trainer. He had three fighters on the card. He went 1-1-1, which I'm sure they weren't expecting that. But, you know, Steve Nelson lost early on the card. He got stopped in the first round, which I thought that was a bit of a early stoppage, especially since you just went the distance with Diego Pacheco, who can really punch. Regardless, that's neither here nor there. And then he gets the draw off with Lester versus Mbili, which was a fantastic fight. And then obviously the masterclass from Bud. Yes, Bomack is one of the best trainers in the world, no question about it. If they have something special between those two, they got magic together. And there's a reason they stay together. There's a reason they've been so successful. And I had a kind of like a little epiphany as I'm watching. I'm like, they have a very systems approach to how they do things. If you noticed, they knew what Canelo was going to come with. Bomack has a great boxing mind. He studies, he analyzes, and I'm sure, you know, Bud, I'm sure, does as well, but they put their heads together. You could tell every time Canelo launched that vaunted left hook to the body, what happened? Bud catches it on the elbow and responds immediately with a rear-handed left hand. And it was immediate. It was like a button. It was a perfect catch and shoot. Even when the punch landed to the body, Crawford responded. It didn't matter. And that's the thing about body shots. There's a delayed reaction.
So even if he got hurt with that body shot, if you fire in between, you can put that guy on his heels for a moment, and then you can recover from the punch. Because I actually did see Crawford get hit with a body shot he didn't like. But
yeah.
But Canelo was already touched by the counter and was thinking, okay, I got to be careful. He didn't think to follow up because he thought Bud was fine. Meanwhile, he was probably hurt to the body and was started moving around quite a bit. But it's a systemized approach. It's like, when he does this, I do this. A, B, C. And that's the thing about Bud that makes him so difficult. It's almost like an AI robot. All right, when this guy throws the jab, I pull, jab counter over the top, come back with the 2-3. When he throws the hook to the body, I respond with the left hook, followed by the right jab. You can tell that these guys have a systematic approach, much to the way Floyd Mayweather did. Floyd did the same moves on every single person he ever fought. Didn't matter if they were southpaw, didn't matter if they were tall, didn't matter if they were short. When you're that good, you can make the fundamentals work on absolutely anybody.
So after the fight, Canelo says that Mayweather is better than Crawford.
I didn't see that. And wow.
That is just fodder for people like me.
Oh, yeah.
That is fodder for podcast hosts. That is fodder for boxing fans.
That's a whole episode right there. We could
that's fodder for fans. Is it a veiled shot at Mayweather? Yes. Is it a way to diminish Mayweather and prop up Crawford? Fighters like to do that as well. They have weird ways of giving credit to their opponents. But Canelo says that Mayweather is better than Crawford. So let's take a look. Mayweather is 15-0 versus Crawford's 42-0. Mayweather started at 130. Bud started at 135. Mayweather went as high as 154, but not a full-fledged 154. Bud obviously jumped all the way up to 168 without any rehydration clauses and fought the way bigger guy in Canelo. How do you look at this? I mean, Mayweather 50-0, marketed unbelievably well. Crawford, 42-0, not marketed unbelievably well. Didn't get his roses until 2023, where he was 35 years old. So they have a lot of similarities, but they also have a lot of differences in terms of how their careers went. But I think over the last 20, 30 years of boxing, I think it's Mayweather and Crawford head and head in terms of just straight up skill.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a debate forever. This is going to be barbershop fodder for the end of time. This is going to be like in Coming to America. Joe Louis, 127 years old when he fought Rocky Marciano. It's going to be one of those kind of discussions, because there's going to be a lot of questions regarding, especially Crawford, because he didn't fight the top welterweights at the time.
Not of his own doing.
Not of his own doing. I'm not blaming Bud by any means.
Mm-hmm.
It was just unfortunate that we didn't get to see him against prime Sean Porter. We didn't get to see him against Keith Thurman at all. We didn't get to see him against prime even Spence. You know, that's arguable, because people are going to say, he was only in hindsight was he not the guy.
Right, but that fight should have been made in 2018.
Correct. And, I'm trying to think about Danny Garcia. I would have loved to see Crawford and Danny Garcia. I would have loved to see Crawford and Sean Porter. You know, that was like, we had a little mini Four Kings era. I think it was Five Kings. In welterweight in that time. They're all PBC fighters, so Bud was kind of the odd man out. But there's always going to be questions because of that. But I don't know if it makes a difference if you fought those guys in their prime. Bud was steamrolling guys at 47 anyway. So that's when the discussion and debate gets really interesting. I mean, Floyd got all those big fights. You know, he was like you said, marketable, and he had a team that was driving him to get the fights that needed to be made. And I will say this, every fight that was somewhat even close or competitive, Floyd fought them immediately. And that's a big feather in the cap for Floyd, because a lot of greats didn't do that. A lot of greats don't do that. A lot of current guys don't do that. So.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
Like Jose Luis Castillo, like the first fight was controversial. He fights him right away, goes right back.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, but Money Mayweather, I thought, was way more careful with choosing his opponents. Pretty Boy Floyd? Well, I 100% agree. This guy fought Castillo.
If we're being honest, this was a careful pick by Crawford.
He didn't do it on he did it on Canelo's terms. Like Mayweather had the luxury. What?
Because he could never beat him. Canelo never beats the guy, and he knew that.
Mayweather was able to had the luxury of doing everything on his terms after the age of 30. After the De La Hoya win. Yeah, after the De La Hoya, he had so much power and so much negotiating power that he put in weight clauses, he put in catch weights, all that. There's something to be said about Crawford going up to 168 without a single fight at the weight and no hydration rehydration clause. That is going to be part of the debate. Like, that's what makes the debate fun, is they're both undefeated. So the casuals can be like, oh my God, undefeated, never lost. Take a look deeper. You look at the resumes. You have Mayweather, who beat Pacquiao. He has Cotto on there. He has Canelo on there, and all of the great wins that he had at 135 and 140. Go over to Crawford. It's the Spence one, and now it's Canelo.
Yeah.
But it's the jump up to 168 is going to be that, like, if we're in a barbershop argument, in the barbershop conversation, the rebuttal is going to be like, yeah, but Bud went up to 168. No rehydration goal. Like, no fights. That's what makes it special. That's what makes it different. I don't think that Mayweather was willing to take a risk like Bud just did. But I would say Bud was a lot more desperate to be great and desperate to make that generational wealth that Mayweather had already accumulated at age 38, like Crawford has.
Let me give you a comparison. Roy Jones Jr., in his prime, didn't have a dance partner, didn't have the greats to fight. He didn't have the Miguel Cotto. He didn't have the Oscar De La Hoya. He didn't have those guys. And then he jumped up to heavyweight. He didn't take an in-between fight. He didn't take an interim cruiserweight fight. He went right to heavyweight. And he fought a big heavyweight. John Ruiz is a big, strong, physical heavyweight. He jumps up to heavyweight. Goes out there, masterclass. Amazing performance. Incredible. And Roy still gets flack, because he didn't have the all-time great guys to dance with. So the argument will always be there against Bud, with both guys. To be, you can sit there one side of the barbershop and be like, bro, Bud's definitely better. He did it this way. Then there's going to be the other guy on the Floyd Mayweather side. He's going to be like, yeah, but he didn't fight the Cotos. He didn't fight the De La Hoyas. He didn't fight blah, 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 blah. So you're going to have the argument forever, which, hey, good. It's good. It's fun. It's good to have this. This is what we love about this sport. Great. Guys, boxing is awesome. A fight. Boxing's a fight. Yeah. So the debates are fights. We're arguing. It's great.
Here's another thing, too. If you want to peel back this even more, it's like the Mayweather detractors are always going to say he fought all of those guys when he was old. They were carefully picked. Pacquiao fight should have happened in 2010. 2008, 2009, 2010, didn't happen until 2015. The Crawford debate is, yeah, his resume is flawed too, but it wasn't by his own doing. He wanted to fight everyone. It was boxing politics. He wanted to fight Spence way earlier. He wanted to fight Porter, Danny Garcia, all the PBC welterweights at the time, but he couldn't. And that's going to add to his lore, and that's just going to add to his argument.
Well, he's going to turn into Marvin Hagler. He's going to be the avoided guy. Marvin was always the
depends on what he does next.
Yeah, true. But Marvin Hagler was the avoided guy. It was the old saying. It's like, well, Marvin, you're in a bad place. You're black. You're a southpaw, and you're good. Nobody wants to fight you. And yeah. I mean, that's Crawford too. And he's going to turn into that guy. So Marvin is another guy who struggled for the mainstream for a long time, even though he was champion and defending his title over and over again. He had to fight a couple guys twice, guys would keep coming back to him, and he wasn't getting those big mainstream fights, and he looked at Sugar Ray Leonard like, this is the motherfucker who's taking all my shine. Exactly. Let me get him. And then he finally gets him, he finally makes that money, and then he walks. But there's going to be a lot of comparisons to all the all-time greats now with Crawford, because he has now entered the room as one of the top fighters who have ever walked this planet. Ever walked this planet.
It's not
crazy at all for me to mention him with Marvin Hagler. It's not crazy for me to mention him with Roy Jones Jr. And that I've never admitted that. I've never been like, nah, Crawford is gonna be, Crawford and Roy, no way. Crawford and Marvin, now. Which,
because of the weight, dude, because I don't know. When you think of Crawford, what do you think of? Which weight do you think of? I think of 140, 147.
When I think of Crawford?
Yeah.
I think of 47. I think he's a welterweight. And when he was asked about making the perfect team, at what weight he was picking, like, it was like 35, 40, 47. He picked and put himself at 47. He's a 47 pounder.
Mm-hmm. Right. But now that he jumped up to 168 and he looks so good, like, you can
now he just looked think good of because a... he looked good because of Canelo.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, Bob Davis
made a great point. He was like, he's not going, and someone else said it too. Oh, I'm sorry. Breadman came on as a guest last night, and he goes, listen, he's fighting, Canelo. He's like, Canelo's a midget. That's what he said. He goes, Canelo's a midget. This is quoting Breadman. Canelo's a midget. He's like, for 68, he's like, it's really size. Impressive.
Yeah,
it's impressive that he's been so good at 68, because the guy's 5'7 and a half. He's like, he's 2 inches shorter than me. So, and he goes, listen, if Bud was going up and fighting David Morrell, he goes, I would go, nah, bro, too far. That's a bridge.
Or like Benavidez, I see some calling for Crawford to fight. My point is like, you can now have these mythical debates. You can put Crawford in there with a Roy Jones because Jones fought at 168. You can put Crawford against a Hagler, a mythical at 160 because Crawford won a huge fight at 168. What?
You could do it in Undisputed, the video game, because... it's weird. It's a weird thing to think about. I mean, these guys are so exceptional, and you said lore. It's true. This is mythical type stuff.
Yeah. What do we think Crawford does next? Because I thought if he won, and it wasn't controversial, I didn't think he was going to fight at 168 again, just for the reasons that you just listed. You know, maybe the other guys are bigger. Way bigger than Canelo, not exactly winnable, and his age too. Does he go back down to 154, or does he just retire and be a real all time great like we wish Roy did after he beat Ruiz? We all saw how Roy's career went after that. I don't think Crawford will do that because Crawford made way more money than Roy ever did. I'm just curious what Crawford does next.
Crawford also lives kind of low, from what I understand. I don't think he's out there. He's not cutting albums.
Bro, the best thing I've heard of Crawford, his first big win at 140, when he beat Ndongo to become Undisputed, he goes, now I can go to Cracker Barrel and everyone will know my name. That's the mindset this guy has.
See, like you talked about, he wasn't marketed, right? That's awesome. That's so endearing. Why would that not be like a mate that everyone should
He's
know
American,
about?
Bro. He's American born and bred.
Yeah. He's it's from Omaha. It's like, he's not more American than that. But anyway, what does he do next? I think he retires. I don't know if there's anything left to do, but that's going to come down to him in terms of because he's so competitive. Can he let the competition go away? We saw this.
He's at his highest powers right now, like highest earning powers, highest visibility. But, he's at number one pound for pound.
But is he at his highest powers for? And we keep using this word, and people are freaking out about motivation. How do you measure motivation? You don't. It's a subjective measurement, guys. Shut up.
Like you're in my world now, where you're looking at the comments. You got like it's bad.
I had to for this one. I never do. Yeah, I had to for this.
It's a big fight. Saying and we're out there.
For the record, when Inside Boxing Live responds, it's Dan, not me. I respond from my account. If I respond. It's because it's from my account. It's never Inside Boxing Live. Dan never talks to me about comments. He never goes, hey, look what this guy said about you. He never does it.
I never get mean. I just get like, I just be like, you serious? Like you're going to question a former world champion. Like,
I get mean.
No offense. Boxing fan 3-2-1. Like you don't know more than Chris.
I get
like,
mean.
I welcome your opinions, guys, but like, don't start name calling.
Yeah. It's the audacity of these people to be like, I know more about boxing than you. Shut up. What are you talking about? I'm a world champ and I call Robert Garcia. What are you talking about? You know, like I talk to these people all the time, but whatever.
Like 154, like the boots fight, there's a Charlo. There's 168. Okay, this is interesting. People were tweeting at me. Bud Crawford versus Bivol at 168.
No. Nope. Bad idea. The movement. Because Bivol doesn't move like a big guy. He's not slow-footed at all. He's in and out. He jabs a ton. He's long. He's tall. He's big. No.
But, I would, like, in this new era we're in, where, like, I'm not going to say weight classes don't matter, because they do, but we're getting into a kind of, like, a weird slippery slope here, where we're just making fights.
This is where I have to step in and be like, in terms of boxing, and this is exactly what Bradman was saying when I talked to him yesterday. He's like, the Canelo-Crawford... When you saw them in the ring together, you're like, oh, okay. You see him in the ring, Bivol's going to be 4 inches
tall. He's 6 foot.
He's going to tower over him, but also stylistically, the way that he moves. Canelo is completely flat-footed. A smaller fighter can have a chance with him, and we've seen that. Bivol is never flat-footed. The guy literally lives on his toes. That's a really... difficult.
But that's what I mean. Like, this is the world we're in when you're Crawford, when you're this good and you're at 168 and I don't think you're going to go back down to 154. That's 14 pounds at this age. Like, I don't
daring
see
to
that.
Great gets you killed. Put it that way.
I know that's the thing. It's like, what does he do now? It's like, I would love to know the conversations. They're not going to happen right now because he's about to go on a crazy victory lap and that Omaha parade is going to slap.
I feel like Crawford's victory lap is going to be like to Cracker Barrel and then back to the gym.
I know, not like partying, but like, I don't think they're going to have conversations on what's next like right away.
Not for a while.
No fighter ever should.
It shouldn't be. He deserves right. it. He spent a year training for this. That's the thing. We yep. forgot about that. Like he didn't take an interim fight just to train for
insane. This. I mean, there's so many layers to this. The first fight at 168, taking a year off, beating, like making it look, it wasn't even like it was like a controversial decision either. Yeah. He made it look easy. And a lot of that had to do with Canelo and him slowing down and him, you know, being past it. But I mean, this is the air that Crawford's in. I mean, Bivol is a guy that beat Beterbiev. He beat Canelo. He's fought at 168. He's said on the record that he would go back down to 168. He said only to fight Canelo. But if you said to Bivol, hey, 168 with Bud, that's a big fight. Bivol Bud is something we would never think of once again. But it could be a bridge too far for Crawford. Then again, Crawford has never lost. And would you doubt him?
The doubt's over. I remember when I lost the doubt for Floyd too. I remember it was the Zab Judah fight. I picked everyone to beat Floyd until Zab, and then I was like, I'm never picking against Floyd again. And I might be at that point now with Bud. I don't care who he fights. I'm never picking against him because the guy just doesn't know how to lose.
But you just said no to Bivol. But you like, I'm not saying make a pick for Bud Bivol here because it's the chances of it happening are slim.
I said
but
no
like,
to Canelo when they talked about it at first. So yeah. Once you get into the weeds of it, it's just like, oh man, this freaking guy figures out a way. He finds a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean his ability to critical think strategies, but also he's not going to take a fight he can't win. So I'll put it that way.
Like, so but, what does he do? Like you've gun to your head, 54, 60, 68, retire.
Retire. No, I think he retires.
That's not good either.
Again, but it's gonna be up to him and kind of what we saw with Floyd, because Floyd's thing is he's so competitive, just like Terrence. And when Floyd would see other guys getting shine, he'd be like, wait, no, don't forget about me. I'm still here. I'm still around. I can come back. You know, I don't see Bud doing that. I don't think Bud's scrolling Instagram to see who the next guy around is. You know, I don't know. I'm speculating, but he can do whatever he wants. He's the king of the world. Right now.
Yeah. The pound for pound debate, I think Bud just leapfrogged Usyk and Inoue. Usyk, I think, is two, Inoue three, Bud number one. I'm not a huge pound for pound guy. I've been on the record saying that. But like, if you go by what it was actually intended for, right? Like jumping up weight classes, could a guy, if take away weights, just skills, and Bud is doing that. And this win, I think, is one of the best wins of the last 20 years. Crawford was at 147 in 2023. That wasn't that long ago. And now he's undisputed at 168. Like, that's pound for pound criteria in my mind. Same thing with Usyk, going from cruiserweight, wiping that out, heavyweight, wiping that out. So Bud and Usyk 1-2. And I tweeted this out, like, how lucky are we that and we get to watch Alexander Usyk and Bud Crawford fight. I wish they fought more, but two all-time greats, two great guys, they're friends. Usyk picked Bud. It's just awesome to be able to have those two. And Bivol and Inoue and all the others.
Don't forget Inoue. I mean,
I don't think we'll be able to talk about Inoue in this episode. We have to do a whole one for him.
He's a generational talent. It's crazy. Right. It's crazy how good he is.
He gets overlooked. It's crazy because he's on the other side of the world. The reasons he shouldn't get overlooked, but he does. But like, I think you agree that it's Bud and Usyk 1-2.
Yeah, no question. And this is another barbershop conversation about who's who and what's what. And if you ask both of them, they're probably going to say the other guy, which just shows the humility of being a great champion. I have to give some thought about that.
How about just forget having the debate? Just how about the two of them reigning over this generation?
You can't do that. Unfortunately, what? Man. You can't just be like, they were the two best. No, which one's the best?
I get it, but I've been just saying from a boxing fan standpoint, like it's such an awesome treat to have these two guys as like the leaders.
We can't call it yet though, because Usyk and Bud are probably going to retire.
Gonna fight. I mean, they got to fight each other, right? Yeah. Weight classes don't matter anymore.
Yeah. I think we should just have a tournament with Usyk and Bud and Inoue. Just we'll see. Just put them all in the ring at once. No, but I don't think we can talk about the generational top dog, because I think Bud and Usyk are going to go off into the sunset, and Inoue is going to continue to do great things, and probably have he's probably going to have the biggest fights of his career after they're gone.
Yeah, but does he have the, first off, does Inoue have the dance partners? Does Inoue have the longevity?
Because he does. He's got Nakatani. He's got, he goes at, he beats Nakatani. He beats, you know, he goes up to featherweight, and there's so many good fighters at featherweight, like
Tank.
Yeah, a tank fight.
It's the world we're living in, bro.
It is the world we're living in. It's very,
it's blurred.
Possible.
Everything is blurred. The weight classes are blurred. Saudi Arabia's throwing money. It's a wild time right now. These are all fun debates, and one thing that is not debatable is that Terrence Bud Crawford is an absolute freak of nature. The best of this, his generation, world-class, three divisions. I mean, all the superlatives, you go up and down. And one thing I do want to say is I did say that I thought Canelo took the loss too well. Unbelievable show of sportsmanship from these two during the whole lead-up. Just shows that you don't have to talk trash. You don't have to shove. You don't have to do all the silly stuff when you have two guys that are at the top of their class. And in the lead up this week, there wasn't any trash talk, and I didn't need it. After the fight's over, Canelo gives him his props. They hug afterwards. He gives him the belts. Bud has nothing bad to say about Canelo. Canelo has nothing bad to say about Bud. That's what the sport is about. That right there is sportsmanship. That's like the gentleman's sport, boxing, right? I know you agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think this elevated. This had the possibility of making things kind of ugly and dumb and blurred and Hollywood style. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of these weird fights, like the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight, where you're like, you left that and you're like, ugh. I had a pit in my stomach after that fight. Didn't like to see Mike that old and put in dangerous situations and blah, blah, blah. And this kind of had a feeling of that too. Had an air about that. But as we got closer, it seemed more like a fight. And then now that the fight actually happened, yes, it was a legitimate fight. And I'm actually glad that it happened. And afterwards, the show of sportsmanship, it elevated the sport, and it could have gone the other way. And I'm happy and hopeful that it didn't. I think this is a good thing for the sport of boxing.
So this is just us raw thoughts, guys. It's Sunday morning, trying to do the best we can to. I'm so tired. Sunday morning, we're trying to get to every topic here. And I think we did a pretty decent job of that. So we will have another episode later this week where we'll have a little more time to think about it. I'm sure there'll be more quotes. There'll be more stuff. We can dive a little deeper. I do want to talk about the production, because this was Netflix's real big event. This was TKO's first soiree into boxing. I thought...
What's your grade? Start with a grade. Well, go ahead. Don't let me cut you off. I'll get your grade in a moment.
B+. I thought the presentation was epic. I thought the presentation was beautiful. Like the walkouts, the visuals, the graphics. The lead-up
show.
Everything was class. And that's Netflix having an amazing budget. That's the UFC knowing what they're doing. The pacing was dreadful.
Yeah.
They didn't get into the ring till after 1 a.m. That was a massive, massive fail. I thought these two needed to be in the ring by 11:30, the latest, 11 p.m., the earliest. Capture all the eyeballs. Everyone that was watching college football, go right over to Netflix. We're not talking about a pay-per-view here. I got so many text messages earlier in the day, earlier in the week, from friends that I never hear from, sports fans that were going to be excited to watch the fight. Who you picking, Dan? Oh, this is awesome. It's on Netflix. Casuals. You had them. You had him hook, line, and sinker, and you started the fight at 1 a.m. It was 2 a.m. at one point. It was 2 a.m. on the East Coast. Who the heck stays up that late if you're not drinking or doing who knows what at a bar? Massive ball drop. You did not need four fights. You did not need Callum Walsh versus Fernando.
You did not need 5 hours for four fights, Dan. That's not how you pace a card. There was four fights.
I can't believe they made this mistake, Chris. Like, they knew it. Like, Dana White has gone on record saying that he hates the way boxing is paced, the cards. I don't know if he leads me to believe that maybe he didn't have much of a say in this. Mm-hmm. I just can't believe they knew how to fix it, and they talked about having how to fix boxing shows for years, and we saw the same thing. 1 a.m., really slow pace, drum solos. Just didn't need that. Didn't need it. Like, my only critique is that it should have been way earlier in the night where we can – it's just a no-brainer. Put the fight on 11 like every other sport.
Yeah, I don't think Dana had anything to do with it. Technically, this isn't the TKO thing. This isn't his run of show, I don't think. I'm not blaming Dana. But also, I'll tell you this, especially now that I'm working with some of these big companies, they can be heavy-handed. and they can change. They want to change the way that you normally do things. So there could be influence from the fact that the provider Netflix, you know, was.
But why would they want it that late?
They don't know better. They don't know better. And I don't know. But also, there was obviously technical difficulties because we came in at 9 p.m. when the telecast started, the broadcast started,
yeah.
Which is a very tight window, and they were in round eight of Brandon Adams and Bohochek, and they had
fights,
and they had to dance, and that many opening fights. Card was that opening fight was silly. There was no reason for that fight to be on the card. Why would you not have Bohochek and Brandon and Adams, yeah. which apparently was an awesome fight? Have that as your opener.
In hindsight, three fights. You need three fights on these Netflix
things. Four fights is fine, but you just move them fast.
But I think Netflix is different because we're looking at a different beast here. This is for casuals.
Was there any film that was worth watching that needed to happen? It wasn't like there was like these big production pieces that needed to get in. I don't understand. There wasn't all these videos or you know, classy production stuff, highbrow stuff that needed to be put in. It was talking heads.
If you want to put that in, do three. I thought it would have been Bohochek Adams leads off the main card. Lester Martinez and Billy, which was an unreal fight. Co-main event. Right into Canelo Crawford.
Yeah.
You have we have no complaints. But you put the Saudi guy in the first fight, which was a developmental fight, at the first fight of the night, which is rarefied air. And then the co-main event, which is even more prestigious real estate. We're talking about the co-main event to the biggest fight of the last 10 years. And I'm watching Callum Walsh versus Fernando Vargas, which belonged on UFC Fight Pass.
It looked like a sparring session as well. It was not a thrilling contest.
And it goes to 10 rounds and there's no exciting moments. And I'm legitimately dozing off. And I don't know. I just thought that could have been tweaked a little bit. In terms of John Anik. Love John Anik. I think he is one of the top five broadcasters in all of sports. I think he's that talented and he's that damn good. But when I heard his voice, all I can think of is UFC.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. But I will say, you know, in defense of that, I don't know how many boxing fans really watch UFC. They might not actually have that recognition like you have. They're like, that's the UFC guy? They might not even know that, which is
overwhelming agreement on Twitter. No, it's not the end all be all. Yeah. I did tweet out what I just said. I love John Anik. It's not a John Anik slander. The guy is unbelievably talented. Like, I want to watch him do football and other sports. I'm just saying, when he's so good at his job as being the voice of UFC that I can only think about him as
indistinguishable voice.
He's so good.
Which is exactly what you want from someone in that position. And I actually said it on the broadcast last night, and Jimmy Smith punched me in the face because
he's a UFC guy.
Yeah, exactly. But
you can't say anything bad about it. He's worshipped in the UFC world. I get that. It's almost a compliment which I'm giving him. I just think of him as UFC.
I think that's by design, Dan. I think that's by design.
Yeah, they made it like and Max Kellerman.
Max is
Max.
Ooh, Max.
Remember Golovkin? Max. Max.
Max. Max. Max.
He said BMF throughout the whole night. Like, are they going to make a BMF belt? Like, I feel like he had talking points. Like, hey, we're going to UFC-ize this event tonight. And Max went along with it.
There's no question he's a plant for the UFC. I mean, from the weigh-ins, that thing that happened there where Canelo had to, like, slap him on the wrist. It's,
that was amazing.
There's no question, you know, he's not hiding what it is, but
Very bad job of it.
I get it. You're being a company man. You haven't worked in a while in this sport.
He's Max Kellerman. Got a lot of money. He's entrenched. Like, he doesn't have to do this.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dan, I mean, we see people we know. We saw people that we've been around who turn these corners quick. So is it really that surprising?
No, I'm not shocked, but I thought, I don't know. I remember Max Pete watching him on public access and he was like against the man. And I still respect him a lot. I think he's an unreal boxing broadcaster. I think the things he sees in there it was awesome to have him back on the call, but yeah, we're living in a different world. We're going to talk Inoue fight on the next episode. It's just too much. he won the fight, and it's not fair to him to kind of just rush through it because he really is.
5 minute quip.
Yeah, and I'd like to keep the episodes
especially
around an hour.
MJ is good. MJ deserves more too because MJ can really fight, and
yeah,
that fight needs more deserving airtime.
And Billy Martinez will end there.
Oof. Oh boy.
Lived up to the hype and then some, man. That's when I got texts from all my casual friends. Yo, this fight is epic. It was Serrano Taylor off the Tyson Paul card.
Young jacked guys who were cracking each other all night long and fighting in a legitimate phone booth the entire night. Yeah. It was awesome. Also, the judges got it right. It was a full on draw.
Should have been 12 rounds.
Winner. Well, so another ball drop from the telecast was the fact that, one, this wasn't the co-main event, but two, that this was not 12. We were robbed of two awesome rounds and probably a winner because I think Martinez was on his way. I thought he had good momentum in those last couple of rounds. We would, have a legit winner and also a title. That was basically a title eliminator. One of those guys fights for a world title next fight. Now they have to fight each other. Maybe they throw a title on top of that. How about that?
What if Bud relinquishes?
If Bud relinquishes, I guess there's too many steps. Anyway, this fight needs to happen again soon, and it needs to be 12 rounds.
Yeah.
And a main event.
They should have done like press a button. We get one more round. The overtime round, which Overtime Boxing does. Shout out to Overtime Boxing. That fight was awesome.
Did
you
score the fight, Dan?
No. I scored the main event. I was watching intently. I put money on Lester. I thought there was good value on him. I thought, and Billy, the way he fights is absolutely insane.
Yes.
The build that he has.
It's so much.
Having that much muscle and never gassing is wild. I thought it took a little bit of time for Lester to get acclimated to not being the front foot guy early on. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the bully in every fight, and he was almost getting out-bullied by Mbili. And then he started picking his shots, and I thought Martinez was landing the better shots because there was a lot of punches to decipher, like, how these are being scored, what's more effective. I would say it was even through 10. There were no qualms about that on my card, no qualms from fans out there. But I would say, like, two more rounds. Like, they didn't distribute the rounds good on this card. Like, how about zero rounds of Callum Walsh, and how about two more rounds of Mbili Martinez?
Well, I mean, maybe not zero rounds. That could have been 8-rounder. And Akakel could have been 4. And
four. I mean, we got 10 rounds of that guy.
Yeah, it was 6 too many. It was actually 10 too many.
It's just weird because, like, the TKO, the Saudi, the Turkey, like, he's made so many strides and has done so many things great and, like, changed things. Like, we're gonna stack the cards. We're gonna make them quicker. We're gonna take out the concerts. Now the concerts are back. Now the undercard just didn't make sense. Like, the main card, like, it just didn't make sense to what we've seen for the last 12 to 18 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's a lot of, like, back and forth, up and down, left and right. But
there's more cooks in the kitchen now.
Well, that's another thing. But then you also have a master chef who walks through and goes, nope, this, that, no questions. And then that's how we go. Okay. And then everyone goes, that's a bad idea, but we got to do it.
Turkey on the menu.
I've seen that in operation in other venues where someone comes in and they just goes, nope, we're doing this like that. And everyone looks at each other like, that's a bad idea, but there's no questioning. We're doing it that way now. And then it turns out what it turns out. So
yeah, you can't complain too much because it was not a pay-per-view. It was free. I mean, it was whatever. Free. $7 a month is the lowest Netflix. A lot of ads, but once again, free. A lot of pushing of Netflix stuff, which I didn't exactly mind because, like, while watching that card last night, I found out, like, 3 or 4 documentaries and movies that I want to see. Like, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck have a movie coming out on Netflix. So that was pretty cool.
I was doing a live, so I literally was filling that the entire time talking to people, so I didn't see any commercials. So
it brought me up to speed on what's coming up on Netflix in the next three to four months.
Oh, well, that's good, Dan. I'm glad that you know what's coming up on Netflix now. I'm sure the listeners, they really love it.
They did their job. That's why Netflix buys these events. That's why they do it, is because they cross promote.
Well, I put my foot in my mouth because I was like, why the hell is Jason Statham and Mr. Beast there? And then, like, off camera, someone was like, oh, they have Netflix shows coming up. And I was like, okay.
Mr. Beast. Someone put an amazing, like, you know, Mr. Beast and his thumbnails that he puts on YouTube. They're pretty epic.
I don't know much about Mr. Beast. I just know when I look at him, I feel creepy and weird.
Yes.
He's a strange looking individual. And I believe his fan base are children. So I'm just.
We don't have enough time to debate the intricacies of Mr. Beast. But he has these thumbnails where he does these like crazy challenges and stuff, like 100 hours of not sleeping. And there was one thumbnail where he looked tired, disheveled, and someone changed the title on Twitter and put, "I survived a boxing undercard." And it looked like he hadn't slept in years. So my only qualm, my only critique is, Lester and Mobili was awesome, but we could have captured a lot more casuals who didn't fall asleep before the main event.
Yes, and I'm falling asleep right now, so I think
we're gonna end the show, Chris. We're good. I'm about to crash hard.
Yeah.
Watch some football. Scour Twitter because those opinions are flying right now on Twitter.
Yeah, you can have fun with that. I'm going to do none of those things. I'm going to leave the sport for the rest of the day.
I would love to do that. How do you do that? Is there a button you can turn off?
No, it's just I have better things to do. I've got a house to take care of.
You're the star, bro. You're the star of the show. So you shut the computer off. You know what I'm about to do? Edit the pod. Get it out. I'm not complaining. This is a fantastic life that I lead. Edit the pod, put the clips together, find out what clips I want, put them online, then debate everybody in the comment section.
Well, that's not part of it. That's on you, dude. Your job is all those other things, and you're really good at it. And like this is Dan. What else? How many jobs do you have?
This is it.
How amazing is that?
I have a new apartment from it.
I got seven fucking jobs. I got maybe that's how I turn it off. I have so many jobs. I just can go off and not think about.
You're the star. This is what you should be doing. You bring your expertise, and then you shut the computer. Perfect. That's what I want.
I still fight with some people sometimes, and I get a little perturbed.
All right, everyone. We did hear from Miles' dad. Miles' dad said that he would love to have his son join the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
I thought today might have been a little too much. Maybe Miles was up late. I don't know. Did he even watch the fight? It's 10 years old. Who knows? But we will get Miles on. Maybe the next episode, we will get Miles on this show to get his thoughts on Canelo Crawford. If that isn't reason enough to tune in next week, I don't know what is. So everyone, enjoy your weekend.
Tell him what you said when he showed him my fight.
I've been conversing with Miles' dad. Miles' dad says that Miles' new favorite fighter, top three favorite fighter of all time, is Chris Algieri. He watched the Provodnikov fight on YouTube, and he said he is a top G.
Top G. we definitely got to get Miles on. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Hope everyone enjoys the weekend. Stay out of those DMs. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up. All that good stuff. We'll see you next time on Inside Boxing Live.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.